Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Compliance Week news podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and today we're going to talk about British enforcement of corporate corruption laws over there. Britain, as many of you know, has just passed a new anti-bribery law, and it has also implemented new reforms earlier this year to smooth out the process of negotiating plea settlements with corporations in misconduct cases. And there's no question that the country is moving forcefully to crack down on corporate corruption. Today we have a special guest to talk with us about that. He is Robert Amay. He is head of the anti-corruption team at Britain's Serious Fraud Office, which enforces corporate corruption cases. And he is one of the chief prosecutors of corporate misconduct over there. So we're thrilled that he has made himself available to answer a few questions for us. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Matt. Good afternoon.
And first question, if you could just tell us about the types of inquiries into corporate misconduct that are high on the SFO's priority list right now. When the U.S. companies hear anti-corruption, they automatically think of bribery and the FCPA, the Foreign Corrupt Practices here. Is that essentially the same sort of priority list for the SFO?
Well, it's true to say that combating corruption and bribery is one of our key priorities. And it's also right to say that this is quite a momentous time for the UK's fight against bribery and corruption. For those who have been following the actions of the Serious Fraud Office in recent times will have seen an ever-increasing number of cases that we're bringing to court, right through from Mabian Johnson, Balfour Beatty, Amec, and to the more recent cases of Innospec and Dougal that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as you've mentioned, Matt, that we're very much now on the eve of this new Bribery Act coming into force. It's been enacted, it's gone through Parliament, but it's yet to come into force. And that in itself is no understatement to say will be a revolution that companies will need to understand and make sure that they have the right compliance measures in place. And I don't know if you want me to go through some of the key provisions as we see them. I think it might be useful for people to have a sight of which ones we think are the key provisions of the Act.
Sure. Go ahead.
Right. Let me go through some of those. I think before I do that, though, it's important to stress how seriously the courts are, in fact, now looking at this whole area in the United Kingdom, in England, Wales, of anti-corruption work. And I think it's instructive to look at some of the words of Lord Justice Thomas in the case of Innospec, where he talks about cartel cases, which we're all familiar with. And he says, the level of fines in cartel cases is now very substantial, measured in tens of millions. It is self-evident that corruption is much more serious in terms both of culpability and harm caused. And we can only see the courts taking an ever more dim view of corruption within corporates as we move from here on in. Under the new Bribery Act, the maximum sentence for individuals has gone from 7 to 10 years, and there are unlimited fines for corporates.
So how does that new attitude among the judiciary and in law, how does that translate into more serious enforcement efforts for your agency in particular?
So against that backdrop, if we look at what we have today, the main difficulty confronting prosecutors in our jurisdictions to try and get commercial organizations into the dock has been the fact that we have to prove that a company, the controlling mind of a company, controlling mind and will of the company knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that effectively means that someone at board level or thereabouts knew about the corruption. And you can appreciate the difficulties in trying to prove that. With the new Act, that whole concept has been swept away. We now have a new offence, a new concept, in fact, to English law, which is the concept of failing to prevent bribery. It makes a commercial organisation criminally liable if one of its employees, and this is probably the sting for many of your listeners, not only their employees, but their agents, their subsidiaries, and the people associated with their company, those performing a service on behalf of their company, if they bribe a person, well, the company is liable. So you can see that that's a huge shift now, Matt, from where we are today to this new Act. And that's why it's caused a lot of concern and consternation among the business community.
Let me ask about self-disclosure of corporate misconduct.
Sure.
U.S. companies are very much attuned to that in the United States context, but What can they really expect for tangible benefits to disclosing some misconduct to British authorities? Could you give us maybe an example or two?
Of course, I'll do that, Matt. But let me just, for the sake of completeness, back to the last point. There is a defense that companies can rely on. There is some comfort here of adequate procedures, and obviously people can go and have a look at that, and there will be guidance that's coming out, statutory guidance from the UK government and others, Attorney General guidance to the prosecutors, and we're also looking at whether or not the Serious Fraud Office should be putting out guidance to assist people. In terms of the self-disclosure regime, well, we have a document which was published in July last year, which is the approach of the Serious Fraud Office to this particular area, and you'll find that on our website. Mm-hmm. And in effect, the process works along the following lines. A company, a good ethical company perhaps, who discovers some form of wrongdoing within their organization, some hopefully an isolated incident, then they come and talk to us about that. They tell us what's happened, and in a typical situation, they would then go away and produce a report for the Serious Fraud Office, typically within 60 days, and we decide what the process is there on in. Of course, the advantages for the company is that we are engaged at an early stage. When the matter eventually does get to court, if it does get to court, then they will have all the advantages of having assisted from a very early stage. We would obviously engage with the company, but there can be no guarantees as to outcome, and there never has been any guarantees as to outcome, either in the United Kingdom or in under the FCPA regime and under the deals that have been made in this jurisdiction here. So the starting point when we uncover criminal conduct is to look at criminal sanctions. That's the starting point. But of course, it has to be recognized that proper enforcement doesn't just mean criminal sanctions. We have a whole raft of other powers that we have, civil recovery powers. We have powers under the to bring enforcement under other acts, including the Companies Act. And it's a matter of our discretion where we look. Which avenue we take. And, of course, the factors we take into account, of course, the self-disclosure, how early it was, what type of action they've taken, how isolated an incident it was, whether the problem has been remedied and the procedures have been strengthened. Mm-hmm. But also we look at the procedures generally. What are they? Are they adequate? Which brings us back to that defense I mentioned earlier on.
All right. Actually, Robert, that is all the time that we have today. I wish we did have more time. You've given us plenty to think about here and covered a lot of ground. So thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks, Matt.
And again, everybody, that is Robert Amay of Britain's Serious Fraud Office. He's talking with us about the SFO's approach to corporate misconduct these days and how U.S. companies can think about working with the SFO and handling that regime. That is all for this week's podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time.